Diane Rehm discusses her new documentary film, When My Time Comes. For decades, Diane Rehm's calm and compassionate but firm interviews on The Diane Rehm Show guided us through the issues of the day. Even though she no longer hosts a daily national public radio program, Rehm is still committed to seeking answers. Her podcast, On My Mind, continues to inform and engage listeners. And now, in a new PBS special, Rehm explores the Right to Die movement in America. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, our guest is Diane Rehm. We will discuss her new film and how her husband's diagnosis of Parkinson's disease catalyzed her interest in death with dignity legislation all over America. What are your questions for the legendary interviewer, Diane Rehm? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You'll remember my guest today from her long and award-winning career as public radio host of The Diane Rehm Show. Diane joins us today to talk about a one-hour documentary airing on Maine Public Television tomorrow night called When My Time Comes. Since ending The Diane Rehm Show, Diane has kept busy with her work for the Right to Die movement, as well as hosting the podcast On My Mind. Diane, welcome back to Maine Calling. We're so happy to have you with us.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be with you.
We invite your questions and comments, you in the audience. We'd love to know what your questions are for Diane Rehm, not only about the film and her life experience, but if you're one of her podcast listeners, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, the number 1-800-399-3566. Diane, I know that this project for you has been a very personal journey. You have investigated many issues over the years as the host of a syndicated national radio program, but this was different. This was about your life, your husband, your family.
Well, it began that way, certainly, with the death of my husband. He was in a care facility because he had serious Parkinson's disease. In the end, he could no longer feed himself. He couldn't stand on his own. He could not shower or toilet himself. He was a very proud man. And in the end, he asked for my daughter, who is a physician in Boston, to be on the telephone line. He asked for our son, who's vice president of a university, to be in the room, and for his doctor to be in the room. And he said to all of us, but most especially to the doctor, "I am ready to die, and I want your help." And of course, in Maryland, where he was, the doctor said, "I don't have the legal right or the moral right to help you die. The only thing you can do is to stop eating, stop drinking water, stop taking medication." And our daughter said to him on the line, "But Dad, we can keep you comfortable." And John's words I'll never forget. He said, "Damn it, I don't want comfort. I am ready to die." He had lost all dignity, Jennifer, and really, for him, a very proud man. He knew he was going even further into indignity. So the next day when I came into his room, not knowing what to expect. He looked absolutely marvelous. His skin was pink, his eyes were bright. And I said, "Sweetheart, you look wonderful. What's going on?" And he said, "I have begun the journey."
Hmm.
It took him 10 long, agonizing days to die.
Oh, Diane.
And I think that's what started me on my journey to try to get people to talk about what they want at the end of life and to try to see to it that they let state legislators know what they want at the end of life, because it is they who control these medical aid in dying laws across the country.
Diane, we've done programs here in Maine on this topic, and as you probably are well aware, Maine does have a death with dignity law now. But one of the things that has always struck me is that those in the hospice community are among those who least want to talk about this. They want to talk about, they don't want to talk about ending one's own life as an option. They want to talk about everything that they can do for someone. And I'm wondering about that. I don't know if the word is tension, but these are all people who care a great deal about end-of-life issues coming to a different conclusion.
Yes, and people do come to different conclusions. However, it's my belief that each of us should have the right and the authority to come to our own conclusion and have that conclusion, that wish, that desire carried out, because it's what we want for ourselves. I'm so happy to know that both Maine plus the District of Columbia, where I live, both have medical aid in dying laws in place. If you are in hospice in Maine, in your own home, and you find out, if you ask your doctor, "How long do I have?" and your doctor determines that you are within 6 months of death, if that doctor then has another doctor to corroborate his decision that you are within 6 months of death, then you become eligible for medical aid in dying. Whether the hospice group that you are with agrees with it or not, it is you who make that decision. And I hope that that's what's happening in Maine and the 8 other states. Well, actually now 9, because New Mexico's governor just last Thursday signed into law medical aid in dying for that state. So we now have 10 states plus D.C. where medical aid in dying is legal.
In Maine, Diane, there were at least 2 referendum campaigns that were close but failed before the legislature passed the Death with Dignity law and the governor signed it. And one of the many things that was so interesting to me as a longtime reporter in Maine is that the referendum campaigns were very emotional and very difficult. But then when the law finally passed, it's been very quiet. There has not been the kind of controversy, the kind of outrage that one might expect from an issue that had been so controversial for so long. And I'm wondering if that's the case in other states and what you think that reflects.
You know, in Oregon, which was the first state to pass the law in 1994, it actually took until 1997 for it to go into effect because so many lawmakers brought up issues that they believed could undermine the law. It finally did go into effect. There are always objections that continued to arise. When we were filming out in California, the very day we got there to do our first interview, the courts had suspended the right to die in California because of a legal matter. And then again, while we were there, a judge overturned that ruling, objecting. So, I mean, these kinds of objections do go on. I'm glad it's been so peaceful in Maine. And the other thing you should know is only two-thirds of those people who apply for and receive the medication to use for medical aid in dying, only two-thirds actually use it. One-third has the medication but decides to simply go in hospice or simply die naturally.
Diane, you've spoken to so many people, and I'm wondering if everybody has different reasons for wanting to have this option, or if you're hearing the same story over and over again, the same thing that your husband said is, I'm not interested in relieving pain. I'm ready.
Well, relieving pain is number six on the list of issues that people cite as the reason to ask for medical aid in dying. The lack of joy in living when an individual has experienced a long illness like Parkinson's or ALS or cancer. That joy in living has long gone. And people who are within 6 months of death, as deemed by two physicians, and in some cases, in some states, there must also be a psychiatric evaluation to ensure that no individual is being pressured from a relative, from a lawyer, from anyone. That person must be able to think clearly, to state his or her reasons for desiring medical aid in dying, and must, and this is true in every state thus far, must be able to self-ingest the medication. No one is given a shot in the arm. If that's what you want, you can go to Switzerland. You can go to other parts of Europe. Even Spain has now allowed medical aid in dying. But in this country, you must be able to self-ingest the medication. No one can do that for you.
Diane, even if you are in a state where this is now legal, I'm wondering if it's still difficult, if it's still difficult to find the doctors who are willing to provide the medication, if it's still difficult to find the psychiatrist. I'm imagining people who are already suffering having to work hard to find resources.
Jennifer, that's such a good question, especially here in Washington, D.C., early on. There was only one doctor who was willing to help the first patient who underwent medical aid in dying. The list has grown because people have become more familiar with it. And I have to tell you, it's the younger doctors who seem more amenable to the idea that a person's life is his or hers to hold. Now, many people try to or do call this assisted suicide. In fact, when one commits suicide, one can do that at any point during one's life. It's a choice. One of the people in our film, a young mother, said to me, "If I had a choice, I would live until I was 90. I have no choice," she said. "I'm dying. The breast cancer I have has spread throughout my body. I have the medication ready. I do not want my 12-year-old son to see me suffer as I had to watch my own mother suffer," she said. But it's interesting that in the end, she never used the medication. She went with hospice, died peacefully. So it is a choice, and it is sometimes in some states hard to find the doctors willing to go along with you, but it's getting easier.
Diane, was it? I can't imagine, after what you went through personally, reliving this over and over and over again, doing these interviews. And I'm wondering how you're doing after having these very difficult and very, I can tell the amount of compassion and caring in your voice, that you cared a great deal about the people you were interviewing. This must have been a difficult film to make.
Oh my gosh, it was. It was a difficult film to make. It brought me to tears on many occasions, but it is something that is needed. We need to talk about death. It is the last taboo. It is something people want to shy away from. I stood in a church in Massachusetts. There were about 350 people in the congregation. And I said, "Raise your hand if you plan not to die." And of course, there was this uncomfortable titter within the audience. And that's usually the way all of us approach the idea of death. We'd rather not think about it and push it off and push it off until, God forbid, your children don't know what you want at the end of life. You, as a child, don't know what your parents want at the end of life. How much easier it is on everyone if they know what each wants at the end of life, which is why I'm so glad John Rehm and I talked as much as we did. When he said, "I have begun the journey," I said to him, "Sweetheart, are you sure this is what you want?" And he said, "Absolutely." Mm. And like every other person I talked to, I understood that feeling very well.
We are speaking with Diane Rehm. Her documentary film, When My Time Comes, airs tomorrow night on Maine Public Television at 9 p.m. If you have a question for Diane, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the Marvin Design Gallery by Eldridge Lumber in Portland, a Marvin retailer providing windows and doors committed to helping people live well in their homes, and Murray Plum & Murray, a full-service Maine law firm committed to helping clients overcome complex legal problems. mpmlaw.com. That's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Are you looking for something to do? Want to let people know about an event your organization is sponsoring? Maine Public's community calendar is here to help. If you represent an organization and want to let listeners know about your event, be it virtual, outdoors, or otherwise, it's easy to enter the details on our online form, and it's easy to find things to do. You can search the type of event, date, or location. Maine Public's community calendar, bringing the people of Maine together with concerts, exhibitions, workshops, and more. Visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, Diane Rehm is with us. She was the longtime public radio host of The Diane Rehm Show. She now hosts the podcast On My Mind. Her work on behalf of the Right to Die movement is the subject of a PBS documentary that airs tomorrow evening at 9 on Maine Public Television. It is called When My Time Comes. You can share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. Please make it a brief email. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to John, who's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. John, you're on with Diane Rehm. Go ahead.
You hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. My issue deals with patients who fear that they will experience Alzheimer's or any other form of dementia in their later years. And I was wondering if there is any place where you can write, in essence, a living will that states that once you start developing a dementia, for fear of what it will do to your spouse, your savings, and just because I have taken care of three parents in recent years that all three had Alzheimer's, so I know the pain and hardship that that situation can create.
Sure, John, and so common to mention Alzheimer's. Diane, my understanding is that none of these laws really are appropriate for people in this situation to have caregivers administer the medications, correct?
That's correct. But this caller and I have in common is the same concern. So what I have done is to, and you see this in the video you'll see tomorrow night in the documentary, I had my grandson, who was 19 at the time, use his cell phone to video me as he was being videoed by our videographer, talking about what I want to happen should I begin to develop any form of dementia. And I have also put this in writing. I have said to my family, I want them to tell me if they see signs that that's happening to me, because I, like your caller, Jennifer, do not wish to live through those agonizing extended years for many people with dementia. If I begin to develop Alzheimer's or any form of dementia, I will ask my husband, my family, to let me know that they are seeing those signs. And when that moment arrives, beyond which I know I will not be able to carry out my own wishes, I will take my own life. I do not wish to live with dementia. I will do what John Rehm did, which is called VSAID, and that is stopping eating, drinking, taking any medications, and I will end my life. But you must make sure your entire family, your friends, your doctor knows, because of course if you've been diagnosed as being in the early stages of dementia, your doctor will know. You need to let your doctor know your own wishes. It doesn't come on suddenly. It comes on gradually. There was an article in the New York Times Magazine about two and a half, three years ago about a couple, a married couple, and the wife began to experience early Alzheimer's. And they discussed together at which point she would end her own life before it became possible, before it became impossible for her to end her life. And they had planned for 3 months in advance, and at one point he said to her, you can't wait. And she did. She ended her own life. It's quite a story. But thus far, no law in this country, in the 10 states plus D.C., allows medical aid in dying for dementia or for Alzheimer's. It is only for physical illness.
John, thank you so much for your call. Diane, you mentioned the 10 states plus Washington, D.C. Is there any movement to make this a federal law?
No. It will be up to each and every state. I do not expect that this will ever become a federal law.
We'll go to George, who's calling from Alfred. Hi, George. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you. Oh, boy, it's so nice to hear your voice. I've missed your shows.
Thank you.
I'm Billy, and the topic is me bring up some emotion for me.
I'm sorry.
I'll get through this, sorry. This goes back. I am 70 years old, so I'm not a kid. And my first experience was this when I was 12. My dad was hit by an automobile. They knew there was no chance for him to survive. Back in those days, children weren't allowed in hospitals, so I didn't get to say goodbye.
I'm sorry.
I never understood why they kept him alive, knowing that his brain was damaged and there was no chance of recovery. But they kept him in comfort care for 15 hours. So as a young man, I've lived my whole life believing with death with dignity. And I am so happy to see it growing. I was in Oregon when it was passed. I'm from New England. I was in Oregon when it was passed there, and I was so happy when I came back to Maine to find out that it was up to be recognized in this state as well.
I'm so sorry for the experience you had as a young person. And I can only imagine the horror that that caused you. And I, too, am happy that states are becoming more and more alert to this. As one legislator said to me, we're all only one bad death away from supporting medical aid in dying. So I'm glad you're in Maine. I'm glad you were in Oregon, part of the referendum that brought Oregon's law into being. So just be well. Take good care of yourself.
George, thank you so much for having the courage to call and talk about your story. And Diane, this is sort of part of the conversation, not only the decision with medical aid in dying, but also the extension of life, when, especially when there's, for example, been an accident and people are kept on life support. What is your belief about that practice, which is very commonplace, the ways in which states and hospitals and the medical community is thinking about that? And is change coming quickly enough?
Well, I think you must make sure that your wishes are well known in your doctor's office, with your children, with your hospital. If you are taken to a Roman Catholic hospital, the odds of your having your wishes carried out to allow you to die are minimal. You must understand that the Roman Catholic Church has been the biggest funder and the greatest opposition to medical aid in dying across this country. 18.5% of the hospitals in this country are owned and operated by the Roman Catholic Church. I personally do not believe that either the church, of which I am a practicing Episcopalian, I don't believe that either the church or a lawmaker should be the one to decide how long my life should last. There's a story in both my book that I wrote based on the film that you're going to see tomorrow night about an 82-year-old woman who had all of her legal documents in place. She fell in her apartment, and a neighbor called 911. Now, you must be careful about calling 911 because the individuals who come will automatically try to resuscitate you. They transferred this 82-year-old woman who had all of her documents in place saying, do not resuscitate. Please do not resuscitate. They did resuscitate her. She woke up in the ICU absolutely infuriated that she was still alive. So what I am saying to you is that paperwork is not enough. Make sure that all your paperwork is in place, but also inform your family, your doctor, your spouse, your friends of what you want. And that's why, Jennifer, throughout this country, there are coming to be what are calling death cafes. People come together who are neighbors, who are friends, some in churches who don't know each other at all, but they are determined to talk about death and what they want at the end of life, making that conversation with their own families that much easier. And you have to remember, it's not just one conversation, it's many. People are so uncomfortable talking about it. It's the last taboo.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get started, you'll see how easy it is and how comfortable it makes you feel.
We are speaking with Diane Rehm herself. If you'd like to join the conversation, you have time if you give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A lot of calls coming in. We'll get to as many as possible after the break. You can also send a very brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from New England Naturopathic Health, committed to treating the underlying causes of chronic disease, naturopathicme.com, and Camden National Bank, committed to providing personalized local service by people who live and work in your community. Learn more at camdennational.com.
I'm Callum Borchers. President Biden's infrastructure plan calls for at least $100 billion to overhaul the electric grid to make it cleaner and more reliable in light of climate change.
We need to be investing in our grid to making it more resilient as climate impacts like heat waves and hurricanes start to accelerate.
That's next time on Here and Now.
That's coming up shortly at 12 noon here on Maine Public Radio. A reminder about our Maine's Political Pulse podcast and corresponding newsletter. Maine's Political Pulse is the weekly discussion on the politics here at home with our two top Maine Public News political reporters, Steve Missler and Mal Leary. The Political Pulse podcast and newsletter are both available online at mainepublic.org. You can have the Political Pulse newsletter delivered straight to your inbox on Friday mornings by subscribing at mainepublic.org/pulse.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, the Right to Die movement, and our guest is Diane Rehm. Diane began her radio career in 1973 as a volunteer for WAMU in Washington, D.C. And of course, the rest of the story is the rest of the story. She's the longtime host of The Diane Rehm Show, the author of four best-selling books, and now hosts the podcast On My Mind. Her documentary, When My Time Comes, airs tomorrow night, tomorrow evening on Maine Public Television at 9 o'clock. And we highly recommend that you watch that. Diane, so many good questions coming in. This is from Donna. I am a retired certified hospice and palliative care nurse with 38 years experience in nursing. People want options as they die, even if never used. It is critical they have the choice to die with dignity. I think many people are concerned this might be a slippery slope of relatives pushing this on to the terminally ill family members. I am curious to hear Diane's thoughts about this.
You know, Oregon's law has now been in place for more than 20 years. And Jennifer, there has not been a single case where pressure has been exerted or some nefarious activity has been in place. It just hasn't happened. The idea of the so-called slippery slope, we have seen absolutely none of. And that's why it's so important that there be the decision of two doctors that, in fact, this person has 6 months or less to live. And then, once that decision has been made, then there is a waiting period in many states of at least 2 weeks. And sadly, many people die within those 2 weeks, which is why the state of Oregon is trying to shorten that time. But I can tell you, we've done a lot of research on this, and there has not been a single case of the so-called pressure from the outside or the slippery slope.
We'll go to York and Scott. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi. Boy, I loved your radio show, and this is tremendous. But I'm going to get to the point. I think you're familiar with an article that made a big impact on me. It was titled The Last Day of Her Life. I think you've already referenced it without mentioning the title. But one of the things that really impacted me, and it's to your point that it's not just paperwork, it's not just an isolated conversation. The takeaway that I was left with from that article was that you probably have to come to terms with the fact that you may be giving up a day or two or more of maybe okay life, the good days, bad days kind of thing, in order to have the agency, not just the physical capacity, but the psychological agency to assist in ending your own life. And I thought that was a very important part of the article, recognizing that, as people say, there are good days and bad days, and you may need to reckon with the fact that you maybe have good days. Does that make sense?
It sure does. And I believe that the individual himself or herself is the only one who can do that. No doctor can classify your pain. No doctor can tell you how bad or good the days are. It's really up to you. And that's why I so believe in the autonomy of the patient, the ability for that patient to say, my time has come. I've gone as far as I can go. My suffering is enough. My loss of dignity is enough. I am ready to go. And it should not be in the mind of the doctor. It should be in the hands of the patient.
Scott, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Hockington, New Hampshire. Hi, Kristen. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Kristen. Am I ready to?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, I'm a mama, stay-at-home mama, and I don't know that I ever really thought about death until I gave birth. And I had a lovely experience. It was just more of life just got real. And I want to know if there is some type of way, like, that we can raise our children with knowledge and comfortability of this so natural thing that happens that is so uncomfortable to talk about. I tend to talk with my husband more, and we are so uncomfortable at night to even go there. And then when I do it with my son, he's pretty open, and because I think he's closer to the, you know, the source of
he was sure. Just, and know. Kristen, you said your son is three.
He's three, yeah. And I just want some language and or resources or something so he can grow to not fear it the way I do. And I also want to grow with him that way.
Diane.
You know, for so many years, children were kept away from the idea of death. In our family, because my own mother had died at age 49, I was 19. My father died 11 months later of a broken heart. My husband, John Reams' father, took his own life because he had gone blind and was living on a farm by himself. At 72, my mother-in-law, because she had reached a point where she could no longer care for herself, ended her own life at 92. So for our family, death was something we did talk about. By the time the kids were, oh, I don't know, 10, 12, something like that. But I mean, it was a natural part of the conversation. They knew about my mother and father early on, and they certainly knew about their grandfather and grandmother. So if you can make that a natural part of the conversation and not something that's scary. I mean, let's face it, we are born, we die. That is life. It is not something to be feared, but something to be realized as a natural event that happens in our lives. I wish you all success. I have the feeling you'll do well with your child.
Kristen, thank you for your call. An email here from Julia. I have gotten to know several disability self-advocates who all feel that the growing acceptance of assisted suicide is deeply devaluing to people like them. Phrases like death with dignity apply that someone living with a disability or illness can't have dignity. This is my major concern with assisted suicide. When we rightly focus on preventing suicide among the physically healthy, but for those with disabilities, we focus on helping them die. Doesn't that send the message that people with certain conditions are simply better off dead?
I'll tell you a story about the D.C. councilwoman who introduced medical aid in dying here in Washington. She said she got pushback from two sides of the community that calls itself disabled. One portion felt, as you do, that somehow their lives were being devalued. The other portion said, why did you leave us out? We want that same right to end our lives when our lives no longer contain the joy, the dignity, and when we can no longer tolerate the kind of life we are living. You called it assisted suicide. I ask you to remember that this is medical aid in dying. People can commit suicide at any point in their lives, it is a choice to commit suicide. People who are within that medical aid in dying category have no choice. They are dying. Their lives are ending. They have been deemed to be at the end of their lives, and they want to stop their suffering. So,
Diane, I can't end the program without asking you, and we really only have a couple minutes left, if you could talk about what the COVID pandemic has meant to this movement. Has it, do you believe this has made more people think about death and think about how they want to die than before March of 2020?
I think you put it exactly in the right terms. The horrible deaths of more than 500,000 people in this country from COVID has indeed awakened us to the possibility that death lies right around the corner, totally unexpectedly, for any of us, for all of us. And you never know when that time is going to come. So to plan for it, to talk about it, to make your own decision as to what you want, and to share that decision with your loved ones, your doctor, your friends, your neighbors, so that it's very clear that what you want is carried out. I called my own doctor as soon as the COVID virus broke out and said, I do not wish to be hospitalized. If I come down with COVID, I do not wish to be intubated. I will take care of myself and perhaps die here at home.
Diane Rehm, it is always such a pleasure to have you on this program. And I want our audience, if you have not written it down, not committed it to memory yet, to know that the film When My Time Comes airs on Maine Public Television tomorrow night at 9. Diane Rehm, longtime public radio host and the host of the podcast On My Mind. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith produced the program. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.